Well, I don't feel good with what appears to be a root canal problem. It is currently, it's July 22nd, 2023, and the time is 18:17. Where can I get that in focus? Yeah, yes it is, 18:17 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, pleased to be with you again, although it is a struggle with my current state of health or condition here. I'm healthy in many ways, but I'm telling you, a tooth that is a problem can create a lot of discomfort and bad energy, or low energy, and a lot of malaise in the body. A lot of sickness can be created, or the feeling of sickness can be created with a bad tooth or a root that is a problem, possibly a root in this case. So Carl Jung, the Swiss psychiatrist, said shrinking away from death is something unhealthy and abnormal, which robs the second half of life of its purpose. Very interesting. By the way, we're using the Beyer MC740N studio condenser microphone set on Omni. It's a 5-pattern microphone, very nice microphone. I don't know if it's the best in the world, but it's certainly a very, very, very fine microphone. Now, the problems we had yesterday were caused by with the audio, the audio problems. I tried to troubleshoot it. It was not a loose connection, as far as I can tell. So I actually believe it was maybe, I'm not sure if I played with the gain on the preamps, but it could have been a noisy potentiometer, a dirty potentiometer, what you call a dirty pot in the electronics business, but it's dirty. I don't know what they call it in the electronics business. That's what we call it in the whatever, in the consumer world, I guess, or the hobbyist world, I should say. But I built this preamp myself many years ago. It's got good potentiometers on it. It's just that they get dirty over years and years sitting in the dust. You know, just sitting in the air. They collect dust and they get dirty. So that's what it could have been. So I made sure I worked both potentiometers back and forth several times to make sure that sudden increase in gain doesn't cause clipping, which is what I believe we were experiencing. Now, Lao Tzu, the Chinese philosopher, said, "Be attentive to your thoughts. They are the beginning of actions." And Mark Twain, "Do right, and you will be conspicuous." Not many people do what's right, evidently. And you may have noticed that. I've noticed that, too. Now, our song is from 1980. And this is a live performance from the Merv Griffin Show in 1980 by the band Ambrosia. It's a song written by David Pack. And in the video, Merv says that this song is number one in Europe at the time. It was number one on radio and records, actually, in the U.S., but it reached number three on the Billboard Hot 100 and number three on the Adult Contemporary in the U.S. also. It reached number one, as it said here, yeah. And as I already mentioned, but David Pack wrote this song, and David Pack sings this song, but there's a very talented saxophone player, Royce Jones, and he's not even playing saxophone on the recording that was the single that was played on the airwaves. He didn't even play saxophone on that. Listen to this saxophone player, but he was in the band and he played percussion, harmony vocals, and backing vocals on the single that was released. He's the gentleman in the back with the saxophone, Royce Jones. You might want to note that when you're watching here. So let's hear it. Not from 1980, David Pack singing Biggest Part of Me.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you greet Ambrosia?
Ambrosia. going to be with us a long time. That's number one in your head. Number one in my head. It's David Patton. David, I want you introduce the guys.
All righty.
Okay.
Organ player over there, Mr. Christopher North.
Yes.
Back there blushing on the saxophone is Royce Jones.
Royce.
On the drums, we call him Big, Bad, and Beautiful, Mr. Burley Drummond. And on bass guitar, Joe Puerta.
Yes.
And Narbon kind of thing, Lamita. And on keyboards, David Cutler Lewis.
You guys are thrilled having all these hits and stuff, huh?
Heart attack.
You're classically trained, aren't you?
Well,
you're with Leonard Bernstein out here for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, we had the great fortune of being in his mass, which was at the Mark Taper Forum for about 3 months, and one of the greatest experiences of my life, because actually we're more of a self-taught group.
Right.
We started, in the garages and all that sort of thing, and then with the advent of the Bernstein Mass, we all had to kind of study up on our sight reading.
See what singing the Mass will do for your career?
Hey, it's religious.
Kyrie eleison. Look where you are here. See? Right on the front of the sheet.
Ooh, Cal calls it again.
Cal calls it again.
From God's lips to Cal. Right?
Yeah. Whoopi, their third hit in a row. They had a number one record last year, How Much I Feel.
Right.
Which, David, you want to tell the story how you came to write that? Somebody gave you a certain album as a present?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing. Billy Fordrescher, who's a great, great friend of ours and associate producer of this album, gave me a Marvin Gaye anthology, which is one, he's one of my favorite singers of all time. And after listening to that, I kind of went into my kitchen and made myself a sandwich and wrote How Much I Feel.
Which is a soul song, and he had never done that before.
Right, which is kind of the first venture into an R&B sort of thing for us.
So, that is a great treasure. I've been so absorbed with all this stuff, I forgot to prepare the article, actually. I don't think that we'll have any trouble, but that I was just listening to that music and I was working on the EQ. Let's fix the EQ now. There we go. I needed to EQ it for the music to make it sound any kind of decent on different speakers, so I worked on that. That took quite a lot of work to get that sounding more or less correct. But I think it's decent if we get through all this and it works out. Right. So we talked about 2.8, so we're ready for 2.9. When in Born and Raised, chapter 2, paragraph 9, when 1260, I was going to say 1260, but that doesn't sound right when you're reading out loud. When 1260 days are mentioned, or 1260 days are mentioned, it implies a time period which is accurate to the very day, which perhaps could explain why so many calculations have been done on the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9, verses 20 to 27, trying to be very precise, even trying to be accurate to within one literal day. However, and if you read people's articles on the subject, you'll see that many of them are trying to be accurate to the very day. However, in Daniel chapter 9, we have weeks, in quotes, weeks, as given for seven-year periods, and without any mention of, in quotes, days, it thus appears instead that an accuracy, of about a half a week is called for. An accuracy of about a half a week is called for in the period of 70 weeks. It thus appears. This realization occurred to me only after many trials and observations with exact calculations, which can be made to work more or less by means of one's ingenuity, the use of human ingenuity to extract more fulfillment from a prophecy surely is not the purpose of prophecy, but there are obviously different ways to interpret an utterance. I don't mean that we shouldn't be using our brains or that we shouldn't think. And so there are obviously different ways to interpret an utterance, and multiple fulfillment is much preferred. Secular history is not a reliable source from which to draw regarding the fulfillment of prophecy. and yet it may be at times the only source that seems accessible. In fact, to do with dates, all we have is secular history. The Bible doesn't mention any dates. So if we're talking about chronology, we only have secular history. That's the only evidence that we have. And I wanted to mention something else. We never achieve happiness or receive happiness by, yes, by giving, but not by, there's more happiness in giving than there is in receiving, right? That's true, but it's not by doing what someone else tells you. In other words, giving voluntarily is what that's referring to. Happiness comes from voluntary giving without someone cajoling you and, you know, forcing you through commands or trying to extort your gift from you and all this kind of, that's extortion. That's not going to bring happiness. We don't get happy by trying to please others, okay? That doesn't bring happiness. We, unless it's Jehovah, if we're trying to please Jehovah, yes. But we don't really do it by pleasing Jehovah in our conscious mind. That's the thing. When we give gifts of mercy, it's we don't let our right hand know what our left is doing. Remember also James, I think it's James 4 and 8, but I'm not absolutely sure now. James, in the book of James, it says, draw close to God and he will draw close to you. So, you know, we draw close to God and he draws close to us. He doesn't come to us first and say, this is what you have to do and if you want to draw close to me, and you better do it or there'll be trouble coming your way. That's not how God does things. It's not the spirit of love, and Jehovah is love. So it's just the wrong idea to say that, like, yeah, here's the other thing. If you say, you know, you all are commanded to think in agreement, right? But you obviously are not in agreement, let's say. But if you're commanded to think in agreement, so then you all think in agreement, or you're told, we're sure you're going to love this, and then when it's presented, you're obliged to say, well, I guess I love it. You know, or I, if you do say you love it, have you done it from your innermost heart and your innermost true feelings, or are you just doing it because you were told that you were going to love it? So it takes away all the voluntary aspect if you're told you're going to, you know, to try to force somebody to conform or to force people to unite by telling them that they must be united. That's just the wrong way to do it, clearly, because it takes away their voluntary, willing spirit. In the case of Daniel 9:24-27, there are disagreements amongst believers about a start date for the 70 weeks, some saying it refers to Ezra 7 and 7, or Artaxerxes year 7, and others to Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 8 in year 20 of Artaxerxes. Right. So there are a lot of different things claimed by people. There are also disagreements about what the dating for year 1 of Artaxerxes is, which does make a difference. Some people say 475 BCE, and other people 465, for example. And Floyd Nolan Jones has done a treatment of such things. So that's all for today's study here from the Born and Raised article. The proverb for today, little children, is Proverbs 16 and 15. In the light of the king's face there is life, and his goodwill is like the cloud of spring rain. So, the light of the king's face. Very good. It's a good thing. And his goodwill is a good thing. The king's goodwill. So, I mean, if you're saying to somebody, I'm sure you're going to love it, because you're trying to drive someone away from you, because if they don't love it, then you don't want to have anything to do with them, if that's the reason why you say it, then that's the wrong way to do it, because if it's God speaking, telling us, I'm sure you're going to love it, then he's not allowing us to draw near to him first. In other words, he's drawing near to us first, which is wrong. We draw near to him first, then he draws near to us. And he's not going to do it by trying to compel us to do something and by taking away thereby our free will. So that's just completely wrong. It has to be explained. It has to be known that that is wrong. We need to be given free will. That's one of the most important things of all. We need security too, but we need free will. Absolutely paramount. Vital. Numbers 22. This is about, we're nearly done almost our study, but this is about a little bit different topic. Then the sons of Israel pulled away and encamped on the desert plains of Moab. So they battled with Sihon and Og. Then they pulled away and encamped on the desert plains of Moab, which is north, across the Jordan from Jericho. That's in the north, on the east side of the Jordan. And Balak, the son of Zippor, got to see all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab became very frightened of the people, because they were many. And Moab began to feel a sickening dread of the sons of Israel, because they were on the desert plains of Moab. And Moab proceeded to say to the older men of Midian, "Now this congregation will lick up all our surroundings like the bull licking up the green growth of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of Moab at that particular time. He now sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor. I'm going to turn this air conditioner off to see if this, to show you what the quality is of this microphone without the air conditioning running. And Moab proceeded to say to the older men of Midian, etc. Right. He now sent messengers, that is Balak, the son of Zippor, the king of Moab. He sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, which is by the river of the land of the sons of his people. And the river means almost invariably, I think it is always, the Euphrates River in the Bible. This is the Bible we're reading. Isn't that something? We're reading the Bible together. It's the river of the land of the sons of his people. That is Balaam's people. Balaam, the son of Beor, with Balak sending to call him, saying, "Look, a people has come out of Egypt. Look, they have covered the earth as far as one can see, and they are dwelling right in front of me. And now do come, please, do curse this people for me, for they are mightier than I am. Perhaps I may be able to strike them, and I may drive them out of the land, for I well know that the one whom you bless is a blessed one, and the one whom you curse is cursed." So the older men of Moab and the older men of Midian traveled with the payments for divination in their hands and went to Balaam and spoke to him Balak's words. At that he said to them, "Lodge here tonight, and I shall certainly return you word just as Jehovah may speak to me." Accordingly, the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. Then God came to Balaam and said, "Who are these men with you?" So Balaam said to the true God, "Balak, the son of Zippor, the king of Moab, has sent to me, saying," look, this is Balaam speaking to God, "the people who are coming out of Egypt," is what Balak said to me, "and they go covering the earth as far as the eye can see. Now do come, do execrate them for me. Perhaps I may be able to fight against them, and I shall actually drive them out." But God said to Balaam, you must not go with them. God said, "You must not curse the people, for they are blessed." After that, Balaam got up in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, "Go to your country, because Jehovah has refused to let me go with you." So the princes of Moab got up and came to Balak and said, "Balaam has refused to come with us." That's a long travel to get to the Euphrates River from where, you know, the plains of Moab opposite Jericho, where where the Moabites were at the time that Israel arrived there. So they said to Balak, Balaam has refused to come with us. However, Balak sent again other princes in greater number and more honorable than the former. In turn, they came to Balaam and said to him, this is back, they went back to the Euphrates River again, miles away, many miles away. And they said, this is what Balak, the son of Zippor, has said. Do not be detained, please, from coming to me, for I shall without fail honor you greatly, and everything you may say to me I shall do. So do come, please, do execrate this people for me. But Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, if Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I should not be able to pass beyond the order of Jehovah my God, so as to do something small or great. And now you men also stay here, please, tonight, that I may know what further Jehovah will speak with me. Then God came to Balaam by night and said to him, if it is to call you that the men have come, get up, go with them. But only the word that I shall speak to you is what you may speak. After that, Balaam got up in the morning and saddled his she-ass and went with the princes of Moab. And the anger of God began to blaze because he was going. So we see that God has different thoughts in his mind. And Jehovah's angel proceeded to station himself in the road to resist him. And he was riding upon a she-ass. I was going to say residing, but no, he was riding upon a she-ass. And two attendants of his were with him. And the ass got to see Jehovah's angel stationed in the road. The ass got to see Jehovah's angel stationed in the road with his drawn sword in his hand. And the ass tried to turn aside from the road that she might go into the field. But Balaam began to strike the ass in order to turn her aside to the road. And Jehovah's angel kept standing in the narrow way between the vineyards with a stone wall on this side and a stone wall on that side. And the she-ass kept seeing Jehovah's angel and began to squeeze herself against the wall and so to squeeze Balaam's foot against the wall. And he went beating her some more. And Jehovah's angel now passed by again and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn aside to the right or the left. When the ass got to see Jehovah's angel, she now lay down under Balaam so that Balaam's anger blazed, and he kept beating the ass with his staff. Finally, Jehovah opened the mouth of the ass, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you so that you have beaten me these three times? At this, Balaam said to the ass, it is because you have dealt ruthlessly with me. If only there were a sword in my hand, for now I should have killed you. Then the she-ass said to Balaam, am I not your she-ass that you have ridden upon all your life long until this day? Have I ever been used to do to you this way? To which he said, no. And Jehovah proceeded to uncover Balaam's eyes so that he saw Jehovah's angel stationed in the road with his drawn sword in his hand. We would normally say, have I ever been used to do to you this way? Or was it my habit formerly to do to you this way? And Balaam said, no. And Jehovah proceeded to uncover Balaam's eyes so that he saw Jehovah's angel stationed in the road with his drawn sword in his hand. And once he bowed low and prostrated himself on his face. Then Jehovah's angel said to him, why have you beaten your she-ass these three times? Look, I have come out to offer resistance because your way has been headlong against my will. And the she-ass got to see me and tried to turn aside before me these three times. This is the angel speaking. Supposing she had not turned aside from before me, for by now even you I should have killed, but her I should have preserved alive. At this Balaam said to Jehovah's angel, I have sinned. So the she-ass was saving his life, because I did not know that it was you stationed in the road to meet me. And now, if it is bad in your eyes, let me go my way back. But Jehovah's angel said to Balaam, go with the man, and nothing but the word that I shall speak to you is what you may speak. So Jehovah again changes his mind. And Balaam continued going with the princes of Balak. When Balak got to hear that Balaam had come, he at once went out to meet him at the city of Moab, which is on the bank of the Arnon, which is on the extremity of the territory. Then Balak said to Balaam, have I not for a fact sent to you to call you? Why did you not come to me? am I not really and truly able to honor you? At this Balaam said to Balak, here I have come to you now. Shall I be able at all to speak something? The word that God will place in my mouth is what I shall speak. So Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kiriath-Huzoth. And Balak proceeded to sacrifice cattle and sheep and to send some to Balaam and the princes who were with him. And it came about in the morning that Balak went taking Balaam and bringing him up to Bamoth-Baal, that he might see from there the whole of the people. That's where we are at the end of Numbers chapter 22. Little ones, thank you for joining us today. We've got a very few minutes left. And I know we're supposed to be doing 1 Corinthians chapter 2. If we can, but some points from here. Paul did not use persuasive words of wisdom, he said, when he had visited them. In verse 4, he didn't preach with persuasive words of wisdom, but with spirit and power. But then he goes on to say, in verse 14, a physical man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him. And he cannot get to know them, because they are examined spiritually. However, the spiritual man examines indeed all things. Verse 15, but he himself is not examined by any man. You see, so if we're not examined by any man, then nobody can tell us what we're going to do, whether we're going to be united with anyone else, whether we're going to love anything, whether we're going to think anything at all, because no one can know our mind. No one can examine us. No one can decide for us, because no one can examine us in the first place. For who has come to know the mind of Jehovah that he may instruct him? Because we're like Jehovah. Men are like Jehovah. Humans are like Jehovah. So nobody can instruct humans, because, you know, we don't have that character. We're like Jehovah. But we do have the mind of Christ. So we're like Christ. You know, we are long-suffering. So that's all for our study. I love you, and I hope you have a wonderful day. And on my behalf, I'm Ward Green. It's July 22nd, 2023, 1850 hours, excuse me. On my behalf, it's Willie and Moppy saying bye for now.